one thing that's important for men to do is to realize that it's okay that they're behind. Like, I got to catch up. I wasn't taught right. I wasn't raised right. So I think men need to be okay with catching up.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you there. I just want to say something. It's so important what you're saying is that most men don't do that,
though. Yeah.
That's the issue. Like, most men will think, oh, I'm so behind. There's no point in starting. And so they shame themselves, develop either a self-loathing or self-hatred, project that into the world, diminish their value, and either hide from the world or then compensate aggressively, generally, right? Yeah. And blame everyone else but themselves for not even starting.
Nothing you do matters unless what you do matters. I'm Emerson Delerba, and this is Get Real or Die Trying. How we doing, Tribe? Emerson Delerba here with the Get Real or Die Trying podcast. I'm super excited to be sitting down with Steph Stefandos. I actually heard about Steph on the interwebs and Instagram. He doesn't know this yet, but my sister actually sent me a video of his, a couple of videos actually, one of him speaking and one of his wife speaking. And I was digging what you were saying a lot. But also, I noticed behind you on the shelf there is a book called The Urantia Book, which I'm an avid reader of. I don't know if you dive into that book. So that made me even more exciting. I was like, oh, cool. I like what this guy's saying. I checked out his website. I'm like, I like what he's doing. I like what his wife is saying, too. And I like that he possibly reads The Urantia Book. It's on the bookshelf behind him. So I'm pretty sure him and I could have a good conversation. So I reached out, and here he is. I really appreciate you coming on my show, Steph.
Yeah, likewise, man, and thank you for having me.
So just a little background. I don't know much about what you do, just from what I've seen on your website. I know that you do coaching. I know that you work with men. You work with couples. And I like the sign-off on your email or your assistant's email where it says resilience, awareness, expansion. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of the three brands. And I was like, wow, we could talk about those three things alone right there for a long time. But why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners and viewers kind of a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a coach in the personal development space, and you know, in human potential and how we see ourselves, how we relate to love, particularly relationships, intimate relationships, sacred sexuality. And part of that is understanding the human psyche, understanding our past, our present, our future, understanding how trauma impacts us neurologically, physiologically, psychologically, emotionally, relationally. So I'm trauma-informed with the work that I do. Social psychology is a big part of how I operate in developmental psychology, and I studied that at university. But beyond that, yeah, I do. I work with men, I work with couples, I work with women as well. I work with everyone basically. And a lot of the work that I've done in my early years, was in extreme situations. And so it helped me really understand, what we're capable of, under duress and stress. So for example, I worked a great deal, and still do, but I worked a great deal with, spec ops guys and, elite athletes, Olympic gold medalists, world champion fighters. And that gave me really an opportunity to understand how people operate under pain and challenge, right? And how anything that is sort of caught in the nervous system from the past really impacts their ability to perform, right? Whether it's winning a race or winning a fight or staying alive or, you know, being involved in a particular operation, having a goal that's associated with that. And so it was just a very interesting time, and helped me, again, not only understand others and human behavior, but understand myself as well.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's a little bit of my background, and I very thoroughly enjoy not only helping people optimize themselves and heal and release what is unconscious and unseen to them, but really, you know, from a selfish perspective, it's deeply revealing for me. You know, through each other, we learn about ourselves, right? And so I'm no different. And so having that experience of being able to traverse depth with people really gives me greater insight into where I can evolve and I can grow. And that's something I very much value as well.
Totally. Yeah. I was digging around the last few weeks leading up to this podcast, watching some of your videos on YouTube and Instagram, and really enjoying your perspective on things, and then reading your bio on your website. And I liked what I read about kind of your evolution of where you hit a very low point in your life and you realized that you really had to do something to change and to, you know, you basically were like, I either change and evolve or die. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, talk a little bit about that, because I think one thing my listeners would appreciate and any human being can appreciate really is the process of rising from the lowest point of your life and making a decision at that point, which we all go through in various degrees. And some people don't make that decision to grow more, to become better, to ascend higher, to go further, to really lean into the suffering and the pain and to go deep within and go into that healing process, which isn't an overnight thing. As we know, it takes a lot of time to heal. We're going to be healing our whole lives, but it's the conscious effort of kind of those stepping stones. But your process of like when you, the things that you struggled with and, you know, the point to which you got to where you're just like, this is enough and I need change. What was that experience and what did you start doing to change your life that could maybe help inspire others? Like if somebody's stumbles across this video and they're feeling like they're at that point, like at the bottom and just they're making wrong decisions, nothing's working out. What could maybe inspire them to kind of launch into something different and better for themselves?
Yeah, so the first thing is, you know, I'm just taking a note here on something I think that would be actually useful. I may just, I'm just bringing it off the cuff now, but it may be relevant to your viewers. So the first thing is submission, right? Like we have to submit to the journey of potential pain and challenge that we're about to embark on, because without, you know, we speak about ascension, we speak about growth and expansion, but that doesn't happen and occur without chaos. But the clarity doesn't come. One of the first programs I developed was called From Chaos to Clarity. And we can't derive clarity from clarity, like it already exists. So we derive clarity from chaos, right? We have that juxtaposition and we have that polarity that we experience. And so submission is the first step. And we do everything we can in our society to avoid difficult conversations, to avoid addressing our trauma, to avoid making big decisions, to avoid taking risks, to avoid, you know, being caught, you know, out in the light with our pants down. Now I say that metaphorically, right? Like, we, you know, to expose ourselves. We are so afraid, and we don't allow ourselves to actually experience, you know, truth or just getting really real. Like, in, you know, your title of your podcast, Get Real or Die Trying, right? Like, we don't give ourselves an opportunity to get real because we don't submit to, okay, you know what, for a period of time, I don't know how long. And that's the scary thing, right? We don't know how long. This is going to be a little uncomfortable, maybe a lot uncomfortable. Maybe it's going to expose some big things in me. Maybe I'm going to have to deal with some stuff and take some action and make some changes. And we don't like to make changes either because, you know, certainty and sameness, it feels safe and secure, right? And so that routine feels safe. But if we can't submit to that, then we're not going to get anywhere. Now, the next piece, and there's probably like three steps. These steps, the next two that I'm going to say, they're not really one after the other. They're sort of in tangent. Well, the first part is submit. You have to just submit to this is how it's going to be. That doesn't mean that I'm asking you to get stuck in your pain, to be, you know, sadistic in the nature of how you deal with challenge and to attract it because, you know, you want to experience pain. No, because can you welcome pain or fear or making a difficult decision or getting uncomfortable, can you welcome that in the same energetic that you would welcome an orgasm or a great meal or an amazing conversation or a fucking beautiful sunset or someone just you winning the lottery of $100 million? Like, can you welcome every experience in the spectrum of life with equity? Because every experience carries value. This is something that I learned. Like, I kept avoiding all the difficult things because we're hedonistic by nature. And it makes sense as to why we are. And as we're evolving more in our own consciousness and the way that we think about ourselves and the way that we think about others, it becomes imperative that we welcome all experiences with equity. The interesting thing is that slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And when we accept and we bring those experiences into us, they dissolve and we move through them quicker and we learn and we grow. So we don't have to keep repeating them over and over again in different ways. So submission really is important. The next two steps for me is sovereignty and support. You have to, it becomes so important that you're able to become self-reliant and resilient. But you can only be self-reliant and resilient when you choose to traverse difficulty and challenge as it comes to you. And the support piece is that we're relational beings and we can't do it by ourselves all the time. I'm a big advocate for self-reliance. I'm a big advocate for checking in within. You have the answers. Like when I'm working with people, one of the first things I say to them is, I'm not here to be your guru. I'm not here to really teach you anything new. I'm just here to be on a journey, mate, with you. And I'll reflect back to you. I'm a mirror for you. And I may say things that have been dormant within you, but you already know them. You recognize them to some degree. It's just how we converse and how we interact and how we go deep into our processes. But you're really doing the work. It's not me. So, but we're relational beings and we need mirrors in our lives. So can you be sovereign, take responsibility for yourself, take responsibility for being in solitude, for exploring your own inner chasm, and can you seek support simultaneously? Because that can be deeply empowering for you. Because when we feel that we're not alone, we then begin to feel regulated in our nervous systems. If we're regulated in our nervous systems, that's when true healing and true transformation can take place. Until then, it's all bullshit. It doesn't mean anything. That's the reality of it, because all we're doing is layering a great idea or a new concept over something that's dysregulated and is fighting and striving for feeling safe. And one of the ways we do that is we get into our nervous systems and we help close the loops of trauma. But we do that through being witnessed and being seen through adequate support measures, right? And also then developing an attitude and a real life example of, oh, I can do this by myself, at least part of it. And that brings confidence, right? It brings enticement to move to the next thing, the next, you know, peel the layer back of, okay, what's next for me to unpack that's going to help me be a greater version of myself? So those are the three things I would say: submission, sovereignty, and support.
Very cool. The three S's, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about, it's interesting. You know, my life personally, I prescribe to really submission to, or I try to, the submission to my spiritual elders. And it's really common, obviously, in a lot of Eastern philosophy and theology and culture to have a spiritual elder. And in Western culture, we've completely lost that. And we've actually lost all respect for eldership and even elders chronologically. Now, not someone can be younger than you and be your elder in knowledge and experience, not necessarily experience, but in knowledge and spirituality, because they may have done the work before you did. But what's interesting right now that I'm seeing a lot in the world is the emergence of, like yourself, coaches, mentors, and it's kind of cool because it's a softer approach. Like if someone goes to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist for mental health, there's kind of a stigma, like, because then you know, and people see you as mentally sick, so you have to go see a shrink, you know, so to speak. There's kind of this dogmatic, linear approach to evolving the emotional body through a psychologist that has a bit of a stigma. But now I think with the advent of social media and technology and people really wanting to self-improve themselves, it's kind of a softer approach to psychological healing than having to go see a shrink, but having a mentor or a spiritual elder or a coach like yourself. And I think it's quite interesting how it's kind of the same thing, but packaged differently. And this is just my opinion, it's kind of a similar thing, but packaged differently. And people seem more willing to grow and learn through the approach of just having a conversation with a coach or a mentor versus sitting down with a psychiatrist. Would you find that to be the case?
For certain pockets of people, yeah. And for potentially, subcultures within our mainstream culture, yes. There is a stigma attached to particularly psychiatrists, because they're seen as, oh, you're just giving me meds. You know, you have an understanding of psychology, but it's really about how medications interact with our physiology, right? And even psychologists as well, yes, there's a stigma attached to that. And there are less, and so this is also a healthy thing and an unhealthy thing. There are less regulations in the coaching industry. So in an unhealthy way, it means that you've got charlatans and you've got people doing an 8-week course and thinking they're a fucking guru, right?
I was going to bring that up next. Every 24-year-old in their van is a digital nomad health guru.
Yeah. So what you were saying, yes, like, you know, and that's the downside, right, dysregulated industry, so to speak. It's one of the reasons why myself and my wife and two close friends who have been in the space and coaching personal development world for many years developed a coaching institute to really start providing coaches with greater set of tools that are really applicable to helping people move through distress and pain and fear and trauma and so forth, right? And the upside to not having such a regulated industry is that coaches can be more creative. They can be more approachable and relatable. They don't have to be so clinical and set back, because again, that relatability is really important. We need to know that we feel safe with people. And so a big part of what I do is very well beyond talk therapy. In fact, it's not that at all. And it involves a great deal of somatic therapy as well, and somatic work, and helping people get into their bodies and feel safe in their bodies. Again, they can feel safe in their bodies, they can make changes in their lives. And so, you know, there are ups and downs with that. But yes, overall, I can agree with what you're saying. There are definitely stigmas with these industries, psychology and psychiatry, because they've been around a lot longer, right? They've been around a hell of a lot longer. And again, the downside, and I'm really clear on this, the downside to the coaching industry in personal development is that there are charlatans. There are people that are taking people through processes that they shouldn't be taking them through, and they don't have enough of an understanding of physiology and neurology and psychology. And some other downsides are, you know, the ego that's involved as well. And the thing is like, oh, I've been working on myself for a couple of years. I feel free and I'm eligible and able to coach people now. Yes, you are. And you can meet people where you're at, and they can meet you where you're at, like based on the work that you've done, right? But what I'm seeing and noticing a trend is that coaches are tending to go beyond their scope. And I used to do this as well when I was younger, and I was arrogant and egoic, but also passionate. It wasn't just that I was arrogant and egoic. I was passionate, right? And I still am passionate. And I would sometimes push people too much, like to get the healing, to get the big experience, right? The peak experience. And it can't be that. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of that in our industry as well. And that's immature, right? But you learn these things with time. And what you hope is that you don't do permanent damage or semi-permanent damage along the way. You don't hurt people along the way, right?
What's interesting from like an anthropologic viewpoint of like human nature and human beings is like, you know, we've gone so far away from natural connection, from tribal, you know, community, from having the natural elder, from having the uncle, from having the older person with more experience that you would just naturally have a conversation with around the fire about your struggles, you know, and we're so individualized and, you know, we're so separated that now we have to make an effort to have those conversations, those connections, those what I would think would be more normal human connections of connecting with your grandfather, you know. Maybe not your little grandfather, but you know what I mean? The elder in the tribe or someone who say, hey, look, I'm going through this, or how do I do this? You know, and now there actually has to be you have to be taught to do that. You know, it's not natural anymore. I was blessed to be raised in community, and my parents together started and founded one of the world's largest eco-village and communities. We have 100 people from all over the world living together on 225 acres, all different types of walks of life and families. It's very cool. And I was talking, you should come check it out sometime. It's called Avalon Organic Gardens and Eco Village.
And Yeah.
And we study the Urantia book. That's one of our spiritual philosophies that we really study, the book behind you there. And, you know, one of the concepts I was talking about with eldership, spiritual elders, is, you know, I have spiritual elders in my life, and I'd say 95% of the time, they're usually telling me things I don't want to hear, which is a good sign. It means that, you know, they're pointing out the weaknesses in me. I mean, just yesterday, just this morning, you know, and it's an uncomfortable process to get that pointed out. But they're like coaches. But I was contemplating like this movement of coaches, like we were talking about, and there's the charlatans and the fake ones. And I like the idea and the word and the concept of a coach, because if you look at it, how it's applied just technically, like in sports, a coach is there to bring the best out of you and to like make you the best athlete you can be with your other team players, and to organize this group effort or individual effort to be the best that you can be. And like, we all need coaches in life. And I think people have coaches that don't even realize they're coaches. You know, sometimes like your family member, your uncle, your big brother is just a natural coach. You know, you have a good friend who's always cheering you on, keeping it real with you. You know, when you get off track, smacking you metaphorically, yep. waking you up and saying, look, bro, that doesn't work, man. You got to get your stuff together. And, you know, those actions are not working. So I think what I see now in the world is really a yearning for people to have that connection and guidance. And they're actually looking for spiritual elders in some ways, or maybe they're not ready to articulate that in their consciousness. Because when you bring in spirituality and you bring in the word elder, it brings in that first word you said, submission. And people have to submit to somebody else's perspective. People have to submit to the truth. I have to submit to my elders. And I don't always, but I should. I make mistakes. I think I know more. I'm full of pride and ego. And the interesting thing about consciousness is the more you learn, the more you become self-aware about yourself. It doesn't mean you didn't, these things just don't go away. My ego just doesn't disappear because I realize I have it all of a sudden. Or, you know, it means that I constantly am working on it and changing it. And that self-awareness, something on, I saw something in your bio, you wrote, my selfishness shifted into enlightened self-interest. And I really like that, you know, because we live in such a selfish world. People are brought and raised and they basically strive for complete selfishness, materialism, self, me, me, me. Even the advent of self-love can be over indulged, you know, and not actually really used properly. I like the way you put it, enlightened self-interest, taking a true approach to being interested in yourself and your well-being and your healing, truly identifying your weaknesses, the points of yourself that you need to change so that you can become better. And I was like, I'm going to use that now, enlightened self-interest. So thanks for that little tidbit of like approach, because, you know, it's the same thing as self-awareness. But anyways, I really appreciate that you're on that journey and doing the work you're doing. I wanted to actually read a quote from the Urantia book there, since something we have in common that I think you'll relate to just based upon my limited knowledge of your life and reading your bio. This is from actually the Greek philosopher Rodin, as brought through the Urantia book. It says, success may generate courage and promote confidence, but wisdom comes only from the experiences of adjustment to the results of one's failures. Men who prefer optimistic illusions to reality can never become wise. Only those who face facts and adjust them to ideals can achieve wisdom. Wisdom embraces both fact and the ideal, and therefore saves its devotees from both of those barren extremes of philosophy. The man whose idealism excludes facts and materialist who is devoid of spiritual outlook. Those timid souls who can only keep up the struggle of life by the aid of continuous false illusions of success are doomed to suffer and experience defeat as they ultimately awaken from the dream world of their own imaginations. And that's always been like a guiding, pretty profound nugget there of truth, you know, one that wisdom truly comes from failures. Like, we have to make mistakes and learn, but that if we're not real, we're not getting real about ourselves and our shortcomings, we're living in an illusion, you know? Yeah. And that's pretty much millions and millions of people.
Yeah. We're not complete.
Yeah.
And I say the word complete, and I'll use the words complete and whole in a loose way, because there's an element of wholeness and completeness, and that particular reference is, you know, in Advaita Vedanta we call the Tidium, right? Like, that is the ultimate self, the unchanging self, right? There's that level of wholeness and completeness, and then there's maybe a more superficial level of wholeness and completeness that is consistently evolving and changing. And so it's almost like you're grasping, you're whole, but you're never whole, right? At that sort of level. And I resonate with what you just read. Because if we're living in an illusion, we're living in fracture. And if we're living in fracture, for me, then we're constantly attempting to fill that void. And we'll often do it through compensatory ways, compensatory strategies that are often unhealthy psychologically and psychosocially. That becomes an issue for our relationships. And then the feedback that we get from our relationships and the mirroring we get back from our relationships is reinforcing a pattern that doesn't actually sustain life and expansion and growth of the mind, of the heart, of the body, of relationships, etc. And so now we're not living in potential. And when we're not living in potential, we feel less than. When we feel less than, we go back into that compensation. We've got to do something to feel big and to feel better again. So we then slipstream into the expression of the ego that is all about that hyper-selfishness, right? That sense of self that needs to feel better. And that often comes at any cost. Now we're falling into a bottomless pit that is very difficult to get out of.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk a little bit about brotherhood and your work with men, because I have a lot of men who watch this podcast, and I've done a lot of podcasts about kind of trying to become an enlightened male and what it is to be a balanced man. And there's so many facades that we as men in this world have to break and take off? And what is it to be a real balanced man? And, you know, I think I see some of the work with the Empowered MPBP. Which you're working on. And I think some of the gentlemen that you're associated with, I follow their work too, like Preston. I think he's involved with that. But, you know, the men are just so competitive. Like, you know, we men in general, there's such a lack of connection and working together because of the competition that we're raised to have, that society promotes, and that our fathers teach us when we're young. Luckily not mine, but you know, it's just kind of a generation after generation, we're not really raised the right way. Not everybody, but I'd say the majority. And so when men kind of have an awakening and aha moment, and their consciousness starts to expand, they have to really do all this unlearning to connect. And I think one of the biggest problems on this planet is the competition between men, because that's what creates the wars on the macro and on the micro, the internal, and also creates shame. Men have a lot of shame, don't feel like they're good enough, don't, you know, they compare themselves. And instead of connecting and having a brotherhood and uplifting each other, holding each other accountable, which is a huge one, we're putting each other down and we're competing. So what is some of the work that you're doing? When I say we, I mean men in general, all men. What is some of the work that you're doing through your programs to kind of assist men to connect? And I think a big thing that I have seen through your Instagram videos is vulnerability, connection, intimacy. Another thing men have a real problem doing is becoming, you know, communicative with each other and becoming truly intimate on a spiritual level, and just having a discussion and expressing our weaknesses and being vulnerable, because we're taught that we have to be stoic and strong and we never fail and not express ourselves. And that really messes up our relationships, not just with our brothers, but of course our wives, you know, everybody in our life, because we're not actually connecting and communicating. But with men, tell me a little bit about the work you're doing.
So there's a couple of points to this. There's, you know, firstly, there's a distinction between healthy competition and unhealthy competition, right? Healthy competition has a place, and healthy competition helps us see the parts of ourselves that we cannot see ourselves, because we struggle to see the forest through the trees often. Mm-hmm. And healthy competition can bring out the best in us and even bring out aspects of ourselves we never knew existed. And healthy competition needs to exist without deeper levels of judgment and shame, right? Unhealthy competition is that competition largely that we see in the world today. So first, let me come back. We shouldn't demonize competition, number one.
Yeah, right? There's a place for it. Yeah, I love competition. Yeah, of course, I love getting on the court playing basketball, you know, in sports. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And sports are an extension of our evolution, so to speak, right? Yeah. So that's part of social psyche, right? As an example. And this unhealthy competition that we're living in, it is destructive. And it is destroying our planet in different ways, or it's contributing to the destruction of our planet, because, you know, the planet has its own natural life cycles as well, right? But it's also destroying our souls, right? Because now we're demonizing other people, making them wrong, making them bad, and now there's more segregation, which is to your point, there's more in-group and out-group, right? That's not going to help us in any capacity. So, yes, part of healing that is intimacy and connection and vulnerability and what I call vertical vulnerability. In other words, we're not just leaky in our vulnerability. We haven't gone from being, I'll use the term stoic, even though it's not the completely accurate term, but I say the word stoic and people will relate to it. Like, it's just, you know, it's we've gone from, in some circles, right, in modernity, and this is a very layered conversation, there are many reasons for this, but we've gone from being stoic and hard or firm and rigid and all that, which is probably too extreme in some ways, to now being soft and loose and passive and meek and weak in our constitution as men in certain collective circles. Definitely. Right? So now it's just like every opportunity is an opportunity to be vulnerable. That's not healthy either.
Nope.
And so it's striking that harmony, right? And one of the ways that we do that is when you ask me directly, you know, what are you teaching men and how are you helping them, is clearing the clutter of the past, is helping them deal with their trauma and providing a very safe space for them to unload their burdens and unleash that inner self that needs to be expressed, whatever that looks like, right? And to be met then in safe ways, not only nervous system regulation, but also non-judgment and non-shame. So those men are not shamed. That's really important as well in their expression, right? And then we start to rebuild the man from that place there. And that's an important part of, you know, of healthy masculinity from my perspective. Mm-hmm. Another part of healthy masculinity from my perspective is resilience, mm-hmm. and is mental fortitude and physical fortitude and physical toughness. We're made to be physical. That doesn't mean you need to be the strongest man in the world or the fastest runner or the most agile or any of that. It just means you have to be adept in your body, right? And having that confidence in your body has such a net positive effect in so many different areas of your life, including relationships, including dating, including attraction, sexuality. But importantly, confidence over arrogance, not arrogance is a difference, right? Mm-hmm. And so being competent in your physicality, it matters. It really does, because it gives you a connection to self that you probably haven't had before, right? And the more that you challenge yourself in that domain, as we as men challenge ourselves in that domain, firstly, it's very natural for us because we've evolved extending the perimeter and keeping our tribes, people safe and our land or our area safe and from, you know, from external threat that hundreds of thousands of years ago and millions of years ago was a very real thing. We live in a very easy world today. And this takes me back to resilience. Like we live in from my perspective, an oversensitized, politically correct world that is removing our ability to be resilient, to practice resilience, to practice toughness and fortitude, right? And when we lose the ability to practice that, we're honestly, from my perspective, we're losing part of our humanness, our humanity. We are here today because our ancestors were fucking tough. I'm not talking about the tough that is oppressive or coercive or autocratic or controlling. That's a shadow behavior of unhealthy masculine power. Yeah. I'm talking about a tough, type of toughness that knows oneself, awareness, right?
No, I got it.
Yeah, that really fucking leans in when it gets difficult and says, I got this and I'm going to do my best and I may need your help. And that's a king energy to be able to say, I'm here, I'm in a leadership position for a reason and I will consult my counsel, whoever that may be, my wife, my children, my friend, my brothers, whatever. Like that level of autonomy and that level of, you know, trust in oneself is so critical for, I think, for, you know, the next wave of man moving forward.
Yep. Yeah, you mentioned a few things there that stood out to me. Well, you exited the last thing you just said, consult your counsel. I think that's a really an important thing. For me, as a man who I think would be categorically an alpha male, you know, likes to take control, leadership qualities, I make the mistake of thinking I can do it all by myself. And in the world, I think a lot of men think they have to do it by themselves. Yeah. That's what they're taught, that they should be able to handle everything by themselves and everybody else can relax. But really bringing in, when you said consult your wife, I like that too, because my wife would like that too. But she, you know, I'm learning to consult my wife. I'm learning to consult my mother. I'm learning to consult my sisters. I fail at it all the time, but I'm trying to understand what that means, because I think a strong man, like I said, has inherently the ability to make decisions. That doesn't mean that their decisions are always going to be right. And we talk about characteristics of men. I think decisiveness is a characteristic. I think strength, being a protector. And when you were talking, you were talking about how there's an imbalance of man. Of men's characteristics on this planet right now, which is so true. And I was talking to a friend about this. It's become so balanced, and now, and it's not easy to talk about because it can be misperceived, but you know, there's the language can easily be misperceived. But I would say that in general, men, especially the younger generation, are very soft in the sense that they don't want to take responsibility. They're not in their bodies. You talked about being in your body, feeling good about your body. They're totally not even a part of their body. Partly it's because of the digital age they've been raised in. They didn't have to use their hands and their minds and work hard and feel strong. They could push a button, you know? And I'm of that age too. I'm not quite as bad as a 19-year-old right now or at all, but I grew up on the cusp of the digital age, you know? But I was actually raised a different way, so I was lucky to have like the hands-on experience. But even just the consciousness of man right now is soft. Soft in the sense that they don't strive for strength. They don't strive to be a protector and a leader of their family. And they're afraid of responsibility because a true man takes accountability. And they're willing, when you take accountability, that means you could be wrong and you will be wrong and you'll make mistakes, but you own them and you'll move on from them. But that's really lacking. It's a big problem in the world. I have three sisters and, I talk to my sisters all the time about men and their viewpoints on men and my female friends. And, you know, it's hard to find a good man in the world right now. because they're either super like macho and confused about their male identity and they're basically assholes, very imbalanced, chauvinistic, or they're just wimps and they're weak and they don't want to make any decisions and they're just subservient to the woman and let you decide. A woman doesn't want to decide though. They want the man to make the decisions to help lead them. They want to be a part of it, but they want to feel safe that that man is going to make decisions and guide the relationship and their lifestyle and the spiritual things in their lives and be the leader. And men are afraid to be leaders, I think, because, you know, I don't know why. There's a lot of reasons why, to be honest, but I think accountability and responsibility is a big one. And did you say a vertical vulnerability?
Vertical vulnerability.
Yeah, I wrote that down too. I like that, you know, because it's like vertical integration. I was thinking of, because I do vertical integration, different business practices, but it's kind of like you don't have to do everything all at once. You don't have to be completely 100% vulnerable and like I don't have to spill my guts and reveal every single weakness immediately. I can vertically integrate my vulnerability and work up towards it and become more and more vulnerable. And most people may not even be capable of being 100% vulnerable. They have to learn it little pieces at a time because we're so guarded. We're taught to be guarded, to have the shields up and not let that out. So I appreciate what you're saying because I think it's so important for men and women, but especially men, because we're talking about men right now, to go through that process and to learn those things.
Yeah, great, brother. And I agree on the decisiveness as well. And the decisiveness comes, from a place of, again, knowing self.
Yeah.
We can be decisive and we can be clear in the way that we make choices. We can be discerning in the way that we move through the world by knowing ourselves at a greater level, at a deeper level, and taking the time to really explore who we are as men. And very few men either have the space for that because they're busy either satisfying their ego or keeping up with the Joneses or in unhealthy competition or running away from their pains and their wounds and suppressing or in massive hedonism or whatever it may be, where they don't create that time, or they're genuinely suffering and they don't know how, they're in survival mode. They don't know how to then explore these deeper psychological, psycho-emotional issues that they may have. And there's this massive disconnection. You said this at the beginning of our conversation. It's a massive disconnection to tribe and revering an elder mentality or elder wisdom and elder spirituality. Men need, really clear on this, men need to be taken through cultural rites of passage.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost that in our modern way, in Western culture particularly. Right? Like, sure, you finish high school and you're 18 or 21 and you can drink alcohol and you can get your driver's license. And we have these rites of passage, but they're not real. They don't hold the strong characteristics and qualities of an authentic rite of passage.
Yeah.
Females, they have a very clear rite of passage from being a girl to being a woman.
Yeah.
And that's the onset of her menstrual cycle, of her moon cycle. We don't have that as men. We don't have that distinction. So, ancient tribes cross-culturally for thousands and thousands of years have understood the importance of taking men through varied rites of passage. Now, given that, I've done a lot of study in this area. Some of the rites of passages that men were taking through or boys were taking through were fucking extreme, like pretty extreme. Like, yeah. Does that need to happen now? Potentially not. However, we do need to be challenged and we do need to learn how to overcome and move through challenge and be greeted by men that we then respect at the end of that transition, whether it's a 3-day or 4-day period or whatever it may be, right? So, a 10-day period or 1 day or an event or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But we lack the very deliberate application of that. And that's also a big part of what I do in the work that I do with men is helping men initiate themselves and directing men towards if they're attracted to, certain cultures or elders or older wisdom. Yes, you can learn from me and I can help you integrate what I've learned and all of that. And if you want to go even deeper or if you want to go, I'll go pretty deep, but if you want to go into a different culture or methodology, here is also amazing men in the world and amazing cultures doing these things as well, whether it be a vision quest from a particular Native American culture in the US, right? Or whether it be something more archaic from ancient Greece or whatever it is that tickles you, right? Hey, start processing yourself, start moving yourself through these rites of passages and these initiations, because that's where you grow. Yeah. That's where you level. And the trickle down effect is that you are less of an asshole in the world. You have greater levels of self-love and self-respect, and that trickles to everyone else. Because when you're not judging yourself, you're not judging others. Yeah. And we're not segregating now. That's powerful.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I was thinking back to like the enlightened self-interest. It's like when a man actually takes interest in himself and becomes, you know, comes out of that ego and narcissism and self-absorption, switches it to self-interest to really, you know, change. And I think a lot of men are playing catch up because they didn't have good fathers in their lives. And so they're 30 years old and they're still living in their mom's basement playing video games, you know, but a good father would never allow, you know, their son to be doing that. And this is just a very, you know, broad analogy, but the lack of good fathers is a big problem. And so you see men playing catch up and then they learn these things in their, you know, mid-20s or 30s that they should have been taught by a good father in their young teens. Talk about rites of passage. Yeah. You know, the conversations that should have been happening at 13, 14-year-old with men between a father and a son don't happen, didn't happen, very seldom happen because they, you know, it's just the culture was raised wrong. And so there's a lot of catch up happening of men trying to, you know, become more balanced. And one thing I study with my elders teach me here, and we read a book called The Cosmic Family Volumes, and it talks about circuitry. Each human being is indwelt with the threefold spirit of circuitry. You have father circuitry, son circuitry, and mother circuitry. So another way to say that is like the father is the very masculine, kind of alpha, strong, decisive. The sun circuitry is a reflection of that, but not as strong. You know, it's the sun circuited, and the mother circuitry is the divine feminine, the mother, you know, from the earth. And a balanced man needs to have all three circuitries. A balanced man can't just be father circuited, because if he's not tapped into the nurturing divine feminine aspect, he's not going to be balanced. If he doesn't have the sun, you know, the sun circuitry brings in that balance, because it's not always time to be aggro full male, you know. And so for me, in my walk, I've been trying to balance my circuitry. I'm imbalanced in some ways too. And I mean, we all are, and it takes time. It doesn't just like you read a book and check it off and you're balanced and a perfect man, you know. It's a process. But having the language, having the patterns to strive for, having the concepts and the ideas of like, wow, that really helps me to, you know, the Trinity concept of my circuitry being helps me to be more balanced, you know, like, you know, and tap into those aspects of myself that may be harder to get to. It may be harder to get to my feminine side, but it doesn't mean it's not there. And there's ways to activate it, because men do have a feminine side and it's beautiful. They need to activate it. But if they're too much in their feminine side, then they're not a balanced man. They're out of balance. And so in the world now, I think going back to what I was saying, a lot of men seem soft. They're too what I would call mother circuited. They're too in that mother feminine aspect of their being. Partly because the world has suppressed it so much too, like the masculine father circuited aspect, but also because I think it's a plan, you know, when a man is weak, he's controllable, you know, he's controllable. He's controlled by outside influences, whether it's the media, whether it's his girlfriend, whether it's his family, whether it's the government, you can control him. When a human being is weak, it's not even about man or woman. And so keeping human beings weak and subservient to the wrong things is a way that people get controlled. And I think the more we as human beings decide to come into strength, we need to serve the right elders, the right, you know, situations, and be in service in the right way, not to the corporations, to the governments, or being controlled by our partners, because that's another big thing. Relationships are very toxic, and people confuse themselves that they're in healthy relationships. You know, just because you're having great sex doesn't mean you're in a great relationship. You know, I mean, they can be very toxic. You know, the man could be completely controlled by the woman, or vice versa. There's no respect being shown, and so the culture that we live in is just so sick. I feel so blessed that I'm in a subculture, like I was telling you about, a community of people. And so we've created a micro society, a small little subculture, that's completely separate from the world. Now, we're not blind to the world. We're not influenced by it in some ways. Unfortunately, it'd be nice to be completely not influenced by the world, but that's not really possible unless we lived in a cave. But learning, you know, growing up in a subculture, I've had an interesting perspective of being raised a certain way and then seeing how other people are raised, the majority of the world really, and seeing the differences and being able to analyze, you know, the good and bad from these things. But I think, you know, having, I guess where I started with this is about having a good father. You know, just because a man may have not had a good father and was not raised right doesn't mean it's too late for him to unlearn and to catch back up, so to speak. And I think one thing that's important for men to do is to realize that it's okay that they're behind. Like, I got to catch up. I wasn't taught right. I wasn't raised right. It's kind of like if I just started learning basketball and I jump into the team sport and these guys have been playing for 10 years, I have a lot of catching up to do, a lot of practicing, a lot of working on my drills and my shots. So I think men need to be okay with catching up.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you there. I just want to say something. It's so important what you're saying is that most men don't do that,
though. Yeah.
That's the issue. Like, most men will think, oh, I'm so behind, there's no point in starting. And so they shame themselves, develop either a self-loathing or self-hatred, project that into the world, diminish their value, and either hide from the world or then compensate aggressively, generally, right? Yeah. And blame everyone else but themselves for not even starting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I was contemplating this with because I was having a conversation with a man who was in his 50s. And he was like, oh, I'm way too far gone to learn anything. Like, I'm done. Like, you know, I'm from the wrong generation. I'm just like, look, bro, no way. I'm like, no way. Like, it's totally okay. Like, because he was like, he was basically saying, like, he was having a hard time hearing me as a 30-something-year-old, you know, counseling him. And not a hard time, but he's like, I'm so far behind. And I said, well, you can catch up. You know, we all can. Like, I'm so far behind somebody else. It's all relative, you know? Like, you know, we're all just on this path of ascension together. Having the humility to recognize where we are, where we're not, is important. And humility is not something like men wake up in the morning and say, I want to be humble. Unfortunately, we want to, I want to get ripped and strong. I want to be sexy. I want to be successful. I want to be the smartest guy, the good-lookingest guy, you know? We're not waking up saying, I want to be humble. But really, through humility, you have true power because you can recognize others, and others will truly recognize you when you're humble. And I'm not saying that because I got it down. Believe me, I got to learn this one every day, and sometimes it's painful to learn through my own stupid choices.
Yeah, likewise, man. It's a constant evolution. It's a constant awakening and coming to self and asking self, why am I here? What's important to me? How can I grow? What could I have done differently? Was I a little too aggressive or a little too overbearing today? Yeah, did I, that argument that I had with my wife, could I have just shown up a little differently? And like, it's that level of, again, choosing to be greater self, in greater self-awareness, that brings about that humility, that brings about that transformation, that brings about a newer version of self, so we don't keep looping and cycling the same shit over and over again, the same sense of self or attitude that we don't really want or value, but we're so addicted to it because it's so familiar.
Yeah. One thing I like too about what I've seen in your videos, especially when you're speaking with your wife, is the duality of the father and the mother. The male and the female, the divine, masculine and feminine working together. Because I think, you know, ideally leadership, even on a massive scale, I don't think there should be a president or a prime minister of a country. It really should be a man and a woman together in leadership. Now, do they need to be intimate and be a husband and wife? Not necessarily, but there should be both perspectives. And that's actually balanced divine pattern, is to have a man and woman together. Because the feminine perspective is so important. I guarantee you there'd be a lot less world wars if women were in power. But you can't just be one or the other. You know, there'd be imbalances. But really, I think it'd be so amazing if even on city levels of administration and government, if they started introducing the duality of teams of male and female, it'd be really quite powerful. But it's something that's lacking in this world tremendously.
Well, it's a very interesting conversation. Personally, for me, it's a very fucking interesting conversation that I haven't seen that.
It's hardly anywhere.
Yeah, in modern contemporary times, I haven't seen that at a sort of larger level. I don't know if the maturity of our collective consciousness is actually ready for that.
Yeah, probably not, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it's a really interesting thought experiment, and it's, I mean, I would love to go down that rabbit hole a little more. In fact, I'm probably going to within my own self now. I haven't thought about that for a number of years.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's a new conversation to me, like I'm hearing it for the first time, and it's not, but it feels like that is. So I'm finding that response within me quite interesting as well. So I'm going to explore that more, man. That's a nugget for me. Thanks, bro.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. Absolutely. I noticed on your arm you got some tattoos. Are those the chakras going on there?
Yeah. They're the from the seventh system chakra in about, I think, like 1100 AD, which is very prevalent and prominent in today's world. Well, when we talk about chakras, we talk about the seven chakras. But, I mean, there's so many different other models. There's five system, three system, 14 system, 20-something system, you know. But, yeah, these are the seven in their original colors and in their mandalas as well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the chakras and studying it. And I actually just was doing a podcast with Bruce Lipton. He wrote The Biology of Belief. I don't know if you're familiar with his book. But we were talking about the chakras, and he said something cool. And he's like, you got your three higher chakras and your three lower chakras. And we forget that the one right in the center is the heart circuit, the heart chakra. You know, I think, too, one way I try and identify with men and women, but is the chakras. And I was always blessed by my mother. Even when I was a child, she would teach me about chakras. And so when I got really emotional and you know, crying, and she'd say, you know, son, you're in your root circuit. You're in your root chakra right now. You need to bring all that up and process it with your heart, and then even higher into your crown circuit, into spiritual logic and spiritual intelligence, and bring up those emotions. And, you know, taught me how to use my chakras as a child. So kudos to her. Yeah, I mean, it's a super blessing. You know, her name's Neon Emerson Chase. She's a beautiful spiritual teacher and writer too. And I thank the Lord every day for her helping me. But yeah, I noticed the chakras. So I was like, cool, because even teaching men about the chakras, you know, it's like some guy off the street in New York or wherever, anywhere, who didn't never even heard of it. It could be like a mind blowing, life changing spiritual concept for him to apply to his, you know, personality, into his development, into how he conducts himself.
That's epic, man. Your ability to learn from your mom like that, and that she exposed you to those things at a young age. That's really cool.
Yeah, I feel blessed, man. Continue to be blessed. I was going to ask a few more questions here. We got a few minutes left. I like what you wrote in your bio here. You say, we have a responsibility to the earth, to others, our families, women in particular, and children, to be the best version of ourselves possible. The manner in which men have behaved and do behave as a collective has been influenced by ancient practices, ideologies, social, cultural norms, and archaic structures. And we kind of touched on all of that. One thing that I really... Sorry, I just kind of lost where I was reading. Well, anyways, being our higher selves, basically what I was going to talk about, our lower and our higher selves, is a concept that I'm taught by my elders all the time, is really discerning between my lower self and my higher self. And I think as men, we can operate in our lower selves quite a bit. And you know, again, that ties into our egocentric mind, and thinking that we're in our higher selves even, because there's a lot of power in the lower self. There's a lot of strength, there's a lot of drive, and it can be misappropriated, and we can kind of mistake it as that wrong strength is being something that's right. But for me, I've been trying to identify really getting into my higher self. And I think that language being introduced into the common man would be really helpful. Like, you know, men just start really understanding the difference between their higher and their lower self, their true self, their more authentic self, and their unauthentic self, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it begins with really giving space for that lower self to be expressed. You know, if there's anger and rage there, if there's deep visceral sadness, if there's tension in the body, if there's ego there, if there's shame, if there's guilt, and there are fears there, whatever it is there, is it's really giving safe space for that lower self to be expressed without shaming that part of ourselves. Because the more we shame and judge those parts of ourselves, the more we run from them, the more we avoid them, the more we numb. And, you know, we may numb through workaholism or excessive competition or arrogance. We may numb through, you know, the pursuit of the incessant and extreme pursuit of money or status or whatever it may be, right? Alcoholism, drugs, all of that, anything to do to avoid it. So we want to embrace that as part of our human nature, then get ourselves to a point of maturity where we can more actively and deliberately, and we've spoken about this term deliberate before, be decisive about what self do I want to choose, you know, and honor, really honor ourselves at a deeper level. I think it begins with acknowledging those lower parts of self.
Definitely. Yeah. And lastly, let's touch a little bit on the inner child concept. It's a common psychological concept that people address, the inner child wounding. And I think it's a very important one. And you talked about that too, about men and trauma. I myself, in my own personal life, feel like there's aspects of my personality that are very mature, very developed. And there's also aspects where I'm very childish. And I'm always surprised at the childishness part that comes out. I'm like, wow, that's like a 14-year-old boy. Like, where did that come from? And it's kind of the inner child and things that I didn't really heal from, resents, hurts, confusions that I didn't let go of. And so that inner child comes out. And, you know, in your work, how do you address that? What is your look on the inner child philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I, we have two courses that we developed, level one inner child and level two inner child. In fact, and this may or may not be released then, but this weekend, you and I are talking, October the 8th, we're running an inner child course, right? And it's a 2.5-day intensive and immersive. And so I'm a big believer in reconciling, understanding, and healing that inner child within each of us. And essentially, there's a few different ways to look at it, right? But I'll look at it this way. When we talk about the inner child, we're talking about giving form to an aspect of our psychosocial, emotional, spiritual development that otherwise is often left intangible and immaterial and therefore not accessible. So by giving form to these unresolved, wounded parts of ourselves, you know, these traumas that we've experienced or these belief systems that we've formed that don't really serve us anymore, and so we're in conflict or struggle with, by giving form to these areas of our lives and these areas of our psychological development, emotional development, such as my 6-year-old boy or my 8-year-old boy, we immediately make these parts accessible, number one, and we make them tangible. Now, we can play with them. We can do something with them. We can shift them, morph them, transmute them, transform them, you know, evolve them, etc. And so inner child work becomes so important. Also, it's connecting to the unloved parts of ourselves, right? And for some people, it's connecting to the play and the joy that we've been repressing for so long, because whatever patterns we developed, whatever environments, you know, growing up, or whatever environments we were exposed to, it told us that we couldn't be a child, that we couldn't play, we didn't deserve joy, whatever beliefs that we formed around that. So inner child work is deeply revelatory, man.
Definitely. Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate what you're doing, man, for the world and for men, women, couples, everybody. You know, I think it's important. I think that it would be good if thousands of people took responsibility to bring the new language, the new concepts of growth, you know, because it's about growth. You know, we're all human beings on this planet together, and we all are called to ascend, to better ourselves. You know, I think the first step to consciousness is realizing, wow, I can actually be better than what I am now. You know, and I can actually grow. I can change. I can evolve. I can get stronger. You know, we talk about the physical body, you know, going to the gym and getting that and working out muscles and getting stronger and getting bigger and all that. But there's the spiritual body. What are the spiritual weights that we need to lift? You know, what is the mental and intellectual body of our minds and souls and those weights? And how do we work out that? How do we go to that gym? And it's through these processes like your course, you know, these are the gyms of the psyche that we need to grow and strengthen. And I think that's an aspect of culture at large that's lacking. So I thank you for the work you're doing and helping men change. I look forward to talking to you again in the future, man. Maybe we can work together and learn more together and grow together, man.
Yes, brother, I appreciate you. And I'm going to check out your Avalon Organic Gardens.
Check that out. Yeah, check it out. It's pretty cool. Maybe we can come down and we can do a workshop or something.
Yeah, man, that would be cool. I'll be open to that.
Yeah, we got a couple of Aussies here too. So, you know, you won't feel alone. You know, we got, what, 3 Aussies here? So
there you go. I like it.
Well, thanks for coming on my show, man. I really appreciate it. And you have a great day, man. We'll be in touch.
You too, brother. Take care.
All right. Check out my website at getrealordietrying.com. Leave me a voicemail on anchor.fm/getrealordietrying. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or any of the platforms you listen on. Be sure to follow me on social media and share this podcast with your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to share the vibe. Get Real or Die Trying with Amadon Delerba is a production of Global Change Media. And remember, pain is temporary, victory is eternal.